we are continuing chapter 13 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. And Hermione's just run off. When the bell rang to signal the start of afternoon lessons, Harry and Ron set off for North Tower, where, at the top of the tightly spiraling staircase, a silver stepladder led to a circular trapdoor in the ceiling and the room where Professor Trelawney lived. Lived? I guess she lived there. The familiar sweet perfume spreading from the fire met their nostrils as they emerged at the top of the stepladder. As ever, the curtains were all closed. The circular room was bathed in a deep red dish light cast by many lamps, which were all draped with scarves and shawls. Harry and Ron walked through the mass of occupied chintz chairs and poofs that cluttered the room, and sat down at the same small circular table.
"Good day,"
said the misty voice of Professor Trelawney.
Oh, she's more like, "Good day."
Oh, really?
Yeah.
"Good day." Wait, "good day." Is that like that?
No, that's too Petunia.
"Good day." No.
"Good day." Make it, like, ghostly.
Oh. "Good day." No?
A little higher.
"Good day."
Good. That was better.
"Good day," said the misty voice of Professor Trelawney right behind Harry, making him jump. A very thin woman with enormous glasses that made her eyes appear far too large for her face. Professor Trelawney was peering down at Harry with the tragic expression she always wore whenever she saw him. I feel so bad for Emma Thompson.
Me too.
Like, why the heck did she agree to do that?
I don't know. Probably because her kids were like, "Mom, you've been Harry Potter? That's awesome." Yeah.
Harry Potter has some seriously good actors.
Dude, it has, like, amazing actors.
I know, it's crazy. The usual large amounts of beads, chains, and bangles glittered upon her person in the firelight.
"You are preoccupied, my dear."
No, you're doing too Petunia-y.
Alright, okay.
"You are preoccupied, my dear."
No, don't inflect it so much.
"You are preoccupied, my dear."
No. "You are preoccupied, my dear."
That's what he did.
No, you were like, "You are preoccupied, my dear."
"You are preoccupied, my dear,"
she said mournfully to Harry.
Hey, just go back to the deep voice. You suck at this one.
"My inner eye sees past your brave face," like that.
She sounds like a man.
No, she sounds like a lesbian.
No, she sounds like a bear. Professor Trelawney isn't a lesbian. She's an old maid. She's like, the quintessential old maid. If anybody's going to be a lesbian, it's going to be McGonagall.
Yeah. All right.
And Madame Hooch. Then McGonagall and Madame Hooch get it on. She's all sporty and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm.
Why is her name Hooch?
She drinks a lot.
"My inner eye sees past your brave face to the troubled soul within. And I regret to say that your worries are not baseless. I see difficult times ahead for you, alas. Most difficult. I fear the thing you dread will indeed come to pass, and perhaps sooner than you think."
Her voice dropped almost to a whisper. Ron rolled his eyes at Harry, who looked stonily back. Professor Trelawney swept past them and seated herself in a large winged armchair before the fire, facing the class. Lavender Brown and Parvati Patil, who deeply admired Professor Trelawney, were sitting on poofs very close to her.
"My dears, it is time for us to consider the stars," she said. "The movements of the planets and the mysterious portents they reveal, only to those who understand the steps of the celestial dance. Human destiny may be deciphered by the planetary rays which intermingle."
But Harry's thoughts had drifted. The perfume fire always made him feel sleepy and dull-witted, and Professor Trelawney's rambling talks about fortune-telling never held him exactly spellbound. Though he couldn't help but thinking about what she had just said to him. "I fear the thing you dread will indeed come to pass." But Hermione was right, Harry thought irritably. Professor Trelawney was really an old fraud. He wasn't dreading anything at the moment at all, unless you counted his fears that Sirius had been caught. But what did Professor Trelawney know? He had long since come to the conclusion that her brand of fortune-telling was really no more than lucky guesswork in a spooky manner. Except, of course, for that time at the end of last term, when she had made the prediction about Voldemort rising again. And Dumbledore himself had said that he thought the trance had been genuine, when Harry described it to him. "Harry!" Ron muttered. "What?" Harry
Wait.
Looked.
Sorry.
Should I keep going?
Wait, I'm adjusting and it's loud.
Oh, okay.
You're not loud. My bed is loud.
Okay.
Okay, I think we're good now.
Okay. Harry, Ron muttered. What? Harry looked around. The whole class was staring at him. He sat up straight. He'd almost been dozing off, lost in the heat and his thoughts.
As I was saying, my dear, that you are clearly born under the baleful influence of Saturn,
said Professor Trelawney, a faint note of resentment in her voice at the fact that he had obviously not been hanging on her words. Born under what, sorry? Said Harry.
Saturn, dear, the planet Saturn,
said Professor Trelawney, sounding definitely irritated. He wasn't riveted by this news.
I was saying Saturn was surely in a position of power in the heavens at your moment of birth. Your dark hair, your mean stature, tragic loss of so young in life. I think I am right in saying, my dear, that you were born in midwinter.
No, said Harry, I was born in July. Ron hastily turned his laugh into a hacking cough. By the way, there was I just read a little article about a study that was done to test whether the month you were born had any effect on your personality, specifically how optimistic you were. And the answer is it doesn't. Anyways, it's funny because very few people actually do studies like that because most people would be like, well, of course it doesn't.
No. Yeah.
So that's why the only studies you hear are these quack studies that aren't real science, you know. Mm-hmm. But anyways. Oh, I found when I was browsing the library a while ago, remember when we were in the library and you were working and I was hanging out?
Uh-huh.
I was browsing and I found a book about... what's the word? Telepathy.
Oh, yeah.
And I was reading it, and it cited all these studies, and, like, these studies could not possibly have been true.
You know, I think that there actually are a lot of studies that people do with that.
Like, but they were not clear on what... They were... The way that the book described the studies made it clear that the author of the book was not a scientist and didn't know how to evaluate a study for whether or not it was good.
But I think that actually those studies really do occur because it's something that, like, scientifically minded people are interested in. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but...
The
thing is that whenever they're actually done scientifically, they come out indicating that there's no, there's no evidence of telepathy. Oh, wait, I have something really, a really funny comic to show you. Can I show you?
Yeah.
Okay. This is along the lines of,
Are you done? Ugh.
What is it? There it is. Okay. Check this out.
to me now.
We are continuing, kitten. Okay, so, half an hour later, each one of them had been given a complicated circular chart and was attempting to fill it in the position of the planets at the moment of their birth. It was dull work, requiring much consultation of timetables and calculation of angles. "I've got two Neptunes here," said Harry after a while, frowning down at his piece of parchment. "That can't be right, can it?" "Ah," said Ron, imitating Professor Trelawney's mystical whisper, "when two Neptunes appear in the sky, it is a sure sign that a midget in glasses is being born." Seamus and Dean, who were working nearby, snickered loudly, though not loudly enough to mask the excited squeals from Lavender Brown. "Ooh, Professor, look! I think I've got an unaspected planet. Ooh, which one's that, Professor?" Damn it. I don't know how I'm supposed to pronounce this, because they're going to make a pun on it.
Do it.
"It is Uranus, my dear," said Professor Trelawney, peering down at the chart. "Can I have a look at Uranus too, Lavender?" said Ron. Most unfortunately, Professor Trelawney heard him, and it was perhaps, that made her give so much homework at the end of class. "A detailed analysis..." I'm not going to do the voice because it was hurting my throat.
Okay.
"A detailed analysis of the planetary movements in the coming month will affect you with reference to your personal chart," she snapped, sounding much more like Professor McGonagall than her usual airy-fairy self. "I want it ready to hand in next Monday, no excuses." "Miserable old bat," said Ron bitterly as they joined the crowds descending the staircases back to the Great Hall and dinner. "That'll take all weekend, that will." "Lots of homework," said Hermione brightly, catching up with them. "Professor Vector didn't give us any at all." "Well, bully for Professor Vector," said Ron moodily. So really, what are the odds that the professor of, I think it's Arithmancy, is named Professor Vector? Like, really? Really? They reached the entrance hall, which was packed with people queuing for dinner. They just joined the end of the line when a loud voice rang out behind them. "Weasley! Hey, Weasley!" Harry and Ron and Hermione turned. Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle were standing there, each looking thoroughly pleased about something. "What?" said Ron shortly. "Your dad's in the paper, Weasley," said Malfoy, brandishing a copy of the Daily Prophet, and speaking very loudly so that everyone in the packed entrance hall could hear. Listen to this. "Further mistakes at the Ministry of Magic," he read. I'm going to read it in his voice. "It seems as though the Ministry of Magic's troubles are not yet at an end," writes Rita Skeeter, special correspondent. "Recently under fire for its poor crowd control of the Quidditch World Cup, and still unable to account for the disappearance of one of its witches, the Ministry was plunged into fresh embarrassment yesterday by the antics of Arnold Weasley of the Misuse of Muggle Artifacts office. Malfoy looked up. "Imagine them not even getting his name right, Weasley. It's almost as though he's a complete non-entity, isn't it?" he crowed. Everyone in the entrance hall was listening now. Malfoy straightened the paper and with a flourish and read on. "Arnold Weasley, who was charged with possession of a flying car 2 years ago, was yesterday involved in a tussle with several Muggle lawkeepers, policemen, over a number of highly aggressive dustbins. Mr. Weasley appears to have rushed to the aid of Mad-Eye Moody, the aged ex-auror who retired from the ministry when no longer able to tell the difference between a handshake and attempted murder. Unsurprisingly, Mr. Weasley found, upon arrival at Mr. Moody's heavily guarded house, that Mr. Moody had once again raised a false alarm. Mr. Weasley was forced to modify several memories before he could escape from policemen, but refused to answer Daily Prophet questions about why he had involved the ministry in such an undignified and potentially embarrassing scene. And there's a picture of Weasley," said Malfoy, flipping the paper over and holding it up. "Picture of your parents outside their house, if you can call it a house. Your mother could do with losing a bit of weight, couldn't she?"
Aww.
Ron was shaking with fury. Man, Malfoy's a dick.
Dude, seriously.
Everyone was staring at him. "Get stuffed, Malfoy," said Harry. "Come on, Ron." "Oh yeah, you were staying with them this summer, weren't you, Potter?" sneered Malfoy. So tell me, is his mother really that Porky, or is it just the picture? You know your mother, Malfoy, said Harry. Both he and Hermione grabbed the back of Ron's robes to stop him from launching himself at Malfoy. That expression she's got, like she's got dung under her nose, has she always got that, or was it just because you were there with her?
Nice.
Malfoy's pale face went slightly pink. Don't you dare.
I would have said something dirtier, though. Wait, I want to hear your comeback. If you had a comeback, what would you say?
To him?
Yeah.
I would have just punched him in the face.
You're like Ron. I'm smarter. I would have said, with that expression on her face, is she always like that, or is it just because your father is impotent?
Yeah, anyways, where were we? Don't you dare insult my mother, Potter.
And then I'd say, do you think it runs in the family?
Yep.
Do you think that's good?
I think it is. I don't know what he would have said. He would have... See, the thing is, you can't, like, get into insult fights with guys like this. You just gotta punch him in the face.
Yes, I could. I could get into insult fights with guys like that because he's dumber than me.
That's true. You gotta punch him in the face, man.
Oh, I would, because I'm a girl and he can't punch me back.
Like Hermione punched him that one time.
Right.
Keep your fat mouth shut, then, said Harry, turning away. Bang. Several people screamed. Harry felt something white-hot graze the side of his face. He plunged his hands into his robes for his wand, but before he'd even touched it, he heard a second loud bang, and a roar echoed through the entrance hall. Oh, no, you don't, laddie! Harry spun around. Professor Moody was limping down the marble staircase. His wand was out, and it was pointed right at a pure white ferret, which was shivering on the stone-flagged floor exactly where Malfoy had been standing.
Awesome!
There was a terrified silence in the hall. Nobody but Moody was moving a muscle. Moody turned to look at Harry. At least his normal eye was looking at Harry. The other one was pointing at the back of his into the back of his head. Did he get you? Moody growled. His voice was low and gravelly. No, said Harry. Missed. Leave it, Moody shouted. Leave what? Harry said, bewildered. Not you, him, Moody growled, jerking his thumb over his shoulder at Crabbe, who had just frozen, about to pick up the white ferret. It seemed that Moody's rolling eye was magical and could see out of the back of his head. Moody started to limp towards Crabbe, Goyle, and the ferret, which gave a terrified squeak and took off, streaking toward the dungeons. I don't think so, roared Moody, pointing his wand at the ferret again. It flew up 10 feet in the air, fell with a smack to the floor, and then bounced upward once more. I don't like people who attack their opponents back when turned, growled Moody as the ferret bounced higher and higher, squealing in pain. Stinking, cowardly, scummy thing to do. The ferret flew through the air, its legs and tail flailing helplessly. Never do that again, said Moody, speaking each word as the ferret hit the stone floor and bounced upward again. Professor Moody, said a shocked voice. Professor McGonagall was coming down the marble staircase with her arms full of books. Hello, Professor McGonagall, said Moody calmly, bouncing the ferret still higher. Well, what are you doing? Said Professor McGonagall, her eyes following the bouncing ferret's progress through the air. Teaching, said Moody. Teach? Moody, is that a student? Shrieked Professor McGonagall, the book spilling out of her arms. Yep, said Moody. No, cried Professor McGonagall, running down the stairs and pulling out her wand. A moment later, with a loud snapping noise, Draco Malfoy had reappeared, lying in a heap on the floor with his sleek blonde hair now all over his brilliantly pink face. He got to his feet, wincing. Moody, we never use transfiguration as a punishment, said Professor McGonagall weakly. Surely Professor Dumbledore told you that. He might have mentioned it, yeah, said Moody, scratching his chin unconcernedly. But I thought a good sharp shock. We give detentions, Moody, or speak to the offender's head of house. I'll do that then, said Moody, staring at Malfoy with great dislike. Malfoy, whose pale eyes were still watering with pain and humiliation, looked malevolently up at Moody and muttered something in which the words, "my father," were distinguishable. "Oh, yeah," said Moody quietly, limping forward a few steps, the dull clunk of his wooden leg echoing around the hall. "Well, I know your father of old, boy. You tell him Moody's keeping a close eye on his son. You tell him that for me. Now your head of house will be Snake, will it?" "Yes," said Malfoy resentfully. "Another old friend, growled Moody. "I've been looking forward to a chat with old Snape. Come on, you." He seized Malfoy's upper arm and marched him off toward the dungeons. Professor McGonagall stared anxiously after them for a few moments, then waved her wand at her fallen books, causing them to soar up into the air and back into her arms. "Don't talk to me," Ron said quietly to Harry and Hermione as they sat down at the Gryffindor table a few minutes later, surrounded by excited talk on all sides about what had just happened. "Why not?" said Hermione in surprise. "Because I want to fix that in my memory forever," said Ron, his eyes closed and an uplifting expression on his face. "Draco Malfoy, the amazing bouncing ferret." Harry and Hermione both laughed, and Hermione began doling beef casserole into each of their plates. "He could have really hurt Malfoy, though," she said. "It was good, really, that Professor McGonagall stopped it." "Hermione," said Ron furiously, his eyes snapping open again, "you're ruining the best moment of my life." Hermione made an impatient noise and began to eat at top speed again. "Don't tell me you're going to the library again this evening," said Harry, watching her. "Got to," said Hermione thickly. "Loads to do." "But you told us, Professor Vector..." "It's not schoolwork," she said. Within 5 minutes, she had cleared her plate and departed. No sooner had she gone than her seat was taken by Fred Weasley. "Moody," he said. "How cool is he?" "Beyond cool," said George, sitting down opposite Fred. "Super cool," said the twins' best friend, Lee Jordan, sliding into the seat beside Harry. Beside George. "We had him this afternoon," he told Harry and Ron. "What was it like?" said Harry eagerly. Fred, George, and Lee exchanged looks full of meaning. "Never had a lesson like it," said Fred. "He knows, man," said Lee. "Knows what?" said Ron, leaning forward. "Knows what it's like to be out there doing it," said George impressively. "Doing what?" said Harry. "Fighting the dark arts," said Fred. "He's seen it all," said George. "Amazing," said Lee. Ron dived into his bag for a schedule. "We haven't got him till Thursday," he said in a disappointed voice. And that's the end of chapter 13. And next we'll read chapter 14 called The Unforgivable Curses.
I hope you like that, my sweet kitten. I love you so much, Boo. Sleep well. Good night, lover.